Many organizations believe practicing good cyber hygiene is an impossible task, but it may be easier than you realize. Understanding the risks, developing a plan, and implementing effective and reasonable controls can help your organization flatten the cyber risk curve. I'm your host, Charles Weaver, and this is the MSP Zone.
You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Greetings, everyone. We're back in the MSP Zone, and privileged and honored to have Aaron Farajan from Asigra joining us on the program today to talk about flattening the cyber curve. A little play on words there with the whole pandemic going on. But we're going to be talking about a lot of important issues today related to cyber hygiene and what MSPs and their customers, most importantly, can and should be doing to, as we call it, flatten that cyber curve. Aaron, first of all, welcome back to the program.
Thanks a lot, Charles. Glad to be back.
All right, let's jump right in again. From our last conversation, we crossed the gamut on a lot of topics, but I want to continue on the concept of the way the bad guys look at data. And that's where I, over the next, 30 minutes or so with you, I'd like to explore your professional opinion and what you've seen with the MSPs you work with, how exactly these criminals look at the data. What's the valuation models? I mean, we're not going to go into specifics, but we'll talk about why it's interesting and valuable to somebody and therefore creates the value to steal it, ransom it, hold up for blackmail, what have you. So let's first start with the an easy one, right? Is it your opinion, do you believe that we have all been, we've seen a democratization of cybercrime, meaning it's no longer just the regulated industries that are now vulnerable? True or false?
True. I think, everybody's vulnerable, 100%.
And, another easy one, perhaps. Is it true also that we are seeing this globally, enterprise, mid-market, SMB? Is everyone largely kind of being treated the same by the bad actors?
I don't think exactly the same. I think that absolutely everybody's at risk, regardless of vertical, regardless of geography and organization size. But they're not all treated the same. I think that some, are treated differently. And what I mean by that is they're treated worse, or they're bigger attack vector, like they're bigger targets. Partly because they might be actually bigger in size and they look like, more profitable targets, basically. And they know this, the bad guys know this, because in many cases, the bigger companies usually have cyber insurance and they like to go after companies that have cyber insurance or claim that they have cyber insurance. And in fact, many publicly traded companies have to disclose that they have such types of insurance. And that's just a nice list for the bad guys to go after them, because they know that, if they're successful, they'll hopefully get some of that insurance money. The other kind of ones that are treated differently are governments, these days there is, accusations and allegations that certain state actors are trying to get access to, vaccine research and other kind of research related to COVID and other stuff. If governments are working and developing high-end technologies, military technologies, things like that, they're treated differently because the hackers are not just trying to ransom it. They're really just trying to get actually at the data because they want to build their own, they want to spy, and these are state actors. But so we do have some MSPs that, work with, and their customers are government organizations, and they need, to raise their level of security and make sure that their security posture is, advanced, and that they don't get caught. We all read, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, about certain movie houses that were getting attacked and their films were being released online before, you know, they were releasing them in the theaters and that kind of stuff.
But Sony, yeah.
For the most part, I think, yeah, Sony, I think this hinges on really a simple thing. Even if you're a small business, you know, even a SOHO, small office, home office, a single proprietor, your data is at risk only for a simple reason. It's because you value it. And the bad guys know this. You know, you don't have to be a big military, you know, R&D establishment to be hacked, to be a target. You need to be someone that has data that if you were to lose it, you would say, okay, I'm prepared to pay some money to get it back. It could be your, you know, pictures of your kids, the way they looked like 6 years ago when they were really young. You know, nobody else except you is going to pony up some cash to see that. And the bad guys know that. You're the only one that will value it. And for a small, medium business, you might be thinking, or small businesses or medium businesses might be thinking, why would we ever get attacked? You know, we're just a law-abiding, tax-paying, you know, maybe unregulated. We run a boring business. We've got nothing super secret here. Why would anybody target us? Well, and the answer is, because you're the one that would pay for it to get it back. That's all they care about, the money mostly.
Aaron, I hear that so often, what you just said. I'm boring. Why would anyone want what I have? And what you're saying is, generically, nobody is immune, right? Nobody is immune to this cyber hygiene risk that we're talking about. But it's more sinister almost, because you're portraying what we all know, which is the data is valuable to somebody. Namely you, right? I think that the opposite has been the perspective, which is, why would my data be of interest to somebody else? You're saying, why isn't the data obviously of importance to you, the owner of it? Is that it? I mean, is that the simple?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's it. Because, you know, even if they take your data and they put it out on the dark web or even on the public, you know, you might just say, well, who cares about, you know, my data? It's just not interesting to anyone. The only person that would pay for it is you. And as long as you're interested in your data, they have a customer. You know, they have a prospect that they're going to try to ransom.
Okay. So everybody's basically the same. I mean, what I heard you say is everybody's at risk. There's different levels of risk, but everybody is basically vulnerable. Everybody's a potential target. And if we're talking about ransomware, I believe this is accurate, that really this is non-specific targeting, right? They're just randomly pushing this malware out there, just seeing where it sticks. Correct?
Yep. You can even buy it as a service. You know, you can even buy malware as a service. Some of them are so devious, they even run this like they are an MSP. It sounds weird, but they're almost like an MSP trying to find, you know, bad guys like themselves that don't want to set it up and operate it. They just want to go and, you know, email it and spew it out, but they don't want to develop it and kind of, you know, optimize. So there are actually guys that do the operations for them.
Distributor, malware distributors you're talking about.
Distributors, that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Terrible.
So enterprise, mid-market, SMB. Regulated, not regulated. I suppose the regulated, you know, historically in managed services, we always looked at regulated markets as fairly lucrative places for the MSPs to be in. I think that's still largely true. It doesn't diminish those regulated markets as being important, but what it means is that the others in the non-regulated client markets also now have something to really, you know, latch onto and work to protect.
That's right. The regulated ones, you know, typically have fines. That's why they're regulated, because you have positive obligations in your, you know, certifications or your regulations that govern you. So they know if they target you and they make you lose your data, you're going to be fined, and you don't want to be fined, and so therefore you'll pay the ransom.
We spoke to a retired FBI agent the other day, and he mentioned the reciprocal part of, or the evolving part of ransomware, which is now blackmailware. I'm not sure what the official term is, but basically the threat of exposing the data, different than ransomware, where it's just the threat of, you're never going to get this back unless you pay us, and then we will encrypt it. You and I had a previous conversation about attack loops and some of the new threats that are emerging related to the treatment of the data. Could you talk to us a little bit about that and what's and how is that an emerging threat that MSPs need to be aware of?
Sure, sure. So this is like a cat and mouse game. You know, the good guys do something. They thought that they sealed it. You know, they sorted it out, and then the bad guys come up with something more clever. So it's been a kind of evolving over the last several years. And everybody knows it started with them sending a piece of ransomware. It lands on your machine, gets by the front door, whatever. It encrypts the data, sticks a gun in your face. You have to pay the ransom. And then everybody got wise to it. The government basically said, do three things. You know, number one, don't pay. Number two, train your folks to recognize it, update your systems, and have a good backup. So the next thing that happened was they said, oh, okay, so let's start attacking the backups, because we're seeing that people can restore successfully and then they're not paying us the ransom. So what they did is they started to attack backups, all types of backups, every vendor, every type. And that started to happen. And then the industry, the backup industry, Seagr and others basically said, wow, this is happening all over the place. Let's do 3-2-1, three copies of your backups, two different types of media. One of them has to be air gapped. And then that started to have an effect. Less people, you know, paid. And the bad guys basically, you know, evolved from that. Oh, okay. So you're going to keep multiple copies and one of them is going to be air gapped. Oh, okay. Well, now what we're going to do, and this is where attack loops come in, is they land the ransomware, it gets through the front door, they get phished or somebody gets phished. And then nothing happens. They just land the ransomware and it stays there in this kind of gestation period. And 3 months, 6 months, 9 months we've seen. And it basically, during that 3 to 9 month period, you're backing up your files and you're backing up the ransomware, the viruses that are very well hidden. Some of them are fileless on your network, on the customer's network. So you just think, hey, I'm just backing stuff up. And then after 6, 9, whatever months, some that delay, it detonates and it says, give me the money. I've encrypted your data and so on. And you say, no, I've got my backups. And you go to your backups and you're lucky that you've got them, and then you restore. Or if they've deleted your local backups, you then go to your air gapped copy and you restore from there, whether it's in some kind of,
but you know, think you've done the right thing. You think you've done the right thing and survived.
Except the problem is that during that gestation period, your backups have been infected. So the virus is sitting in your air-gapped copy. And now you're going to stick that syringe right back into your customer's neck, and you're going to restore the virus right back into their environment, and then it's going to happen again and again. So you're hearing and seeing MSPs and vendors and others talking about, what's the number one reason they do restores? It used to be human error. Now it's ransomware, because they keep getting attacked and attacked and attacked again and again. That's called the attack loop. And it's very hard to get rid of, because you don't know what day or what hour you actually ingested it in the first place. So you keep going back and you recover and it happens again. You go back and back and back. At some point you have to go so far back that the data is not really very helpful anymore, and your users get irritated and the bad guys know this.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that's at. And the blackmailware is also something very nefarious. You know, they say, not only are we going to encrypt it, but if you don't, they're lying around 3 to 6, 9 months, and they're stealing information and looking for the good, juicy stuff. And then they know that, hey, if we publicize this, not just incriminating photos of people, but we're talking about incriminating or very sensitive, confidential information. If you're a law firm and you've got private information about your clients, sensitive deals, or information that's incriminating, if you're in a criminal law firm and you publicize that, that will be very dangerous to your credibility, and so you'll pay money to just make sure your reputation and your information is not exposed. So yeah, it's getting very nefarious and very, very bad. They're coming up with very creative ways to force people to pay.
Yeah, I mean, the creativity is alarming. Let's talk a little bit about this air gapped 3-2-1 methodology, because it probably still is, Aaron, a fairly accepted best practice that MSPs are backing up their internal data, and they're certainly encouraging backup as a service for their customers. But you're presenting a case of, it's not just, it may not be enough. It might be the wrong thing to do to just rely on this. So let's talk specifics if we can, right? We all know multiple versions, right? Multiple locations of the backup. So an MSP is backing up their own data, backing up customer data. they back it up maybe locally, they back it up in the cloud, and then you're saying at least one physically separate, segregated, are you talking like a tape? What are you talking about here?
Yeah, it could be tape. It could be other types of media. It should be two different types of media, and one of them should be air-gapped in the sense that you can't access it from the same place as your backup software. So if you took over the backup software, which is what happens, then you won't be able to delete, or you won't be able to somehow compromise that air-gapped copy because you can't access it. It's just in a different location, on a different network.
Off network or off the main network is what you're saying.
Off the main network, yep. Any network. It's just in a warehouse or in a completely separate network. So the point here is, I think, is that MSPs are realizing that the processes that they used to use 2 years ago, you know, even up to a year ago, are constantly evolving. The processes are no longer up to date and modern and don't address the kind of risk. And this, we're just talking backup here. There's other types of risk for RMM or networking or others. And so you have to be able to address not just attack loops, but there are different types of attacks. They come in, they steal credentials, and they basically pretend like they're the backup administrator. And then they go and they delete data, or they take over backup software altogether. They change retention policies. They do lots of things. So different solutions from different vendors. Immutable storage. Oh, you can't delete the storage once the data has been written. Well, what happens is they change the retention policy, and the software itself basically deletes the backups. So there's different things. You need two-factor or multi-factor on your backup software, not just to get access to the backup product in case they steal a credential and log in as a backup administrator, but you need to do two-factor or multi-factor for specific processes or backup operations or steps in backup software, like changing retentions or deleting the backup data, or setting soft deletes, when the data is going to get deleted, these kind of things. So it's not, there are specific things in backup processes that you need to do that you make sure you multi-factor. And it's not just the access into the application. So that's one. You need to set decoys. There's been lots of attacks where, very popular, very well-known backup products have known directory names. So the malware lands, it looks for specific directory names, and it deletes it because it knows that that's the backup directory. And so you have to change the name. You have to, you have to be able to put decoys. You have to have what are called soft deletes, where even if somebody has the 2FA and somebody, is able to successfully, get past everything, they think that they're deleting the data, but they're not really deleting the data. It's just moved or hidden. So you got to protect that backup. Like your house, right? You can't just have a dog. You need cameras. You need a dog. You need guards. You're basically trying to get them to basically say alarm system, everything, you need to say, just go down the street. There's another house over there that's less well protected. It'll be easier for you, and probably you'll get your money faster than trying to break into this one.
Okay.
So that's what we're trying to do.
You remember 10 years ago when backup was everywhere in the MSP channel, and it seemed like, at least from my perspective, it seemed like it became boring, right? It was everywhere. Everyone was talking about it, and it became an accepted, everybody knows they have to have backup. Every MSP was wanting to get into the backup as a service business. But this seems like, as I'm listening to you talk, you are presenting a very realistic, very scary, but a very solvable scenario that, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not talking about necessarily having to go out and buy a whole new backup technologies. I mean, Seeger is, always improving your technology, I'm assuming. We're talking about implementation of new policies and procedures to make sure that what you're doing with your backup is effective for today's threats. Is that correct?
Correct. That's exactly right. The first stop should really be your incumbent vendor. Go to your vendor and say, hey, the process that I'm using today needs to evolve to address threats from my business and my customers. And you're ultimately doing that so your business as an MSP is sustainable long term. And can you tell me about the new features, functions, capabilities that you have in the product, because I'm your customer, that'll help me address these new things? Now, if your current vendor is not able to help you address those things, you know what? you need to start looking at alternatives or not, you know, at augment them, right? But the vendors are being responsible. You know, kudos to the, at least in the backup industry, they're being responsible. They're addressing it, some more than others. There's a few that have been very silent, you know, surprisingly, but the industry is aware of that. We also talk to each other. The vendors, you know, yes, we compete, but there is, at the, some executive levels, the vendors do speak to each other. And because we need the backup industry to be healthy, and we want the MSPs to be healthy, because it's an ecosystem.
Sure.
And everybody's got an interest in making sure everybody's doing the right thing to sustain long term.
Okay. I don't know if you have this data, but not to put you on the spot, if you could give me your best guess estimate of what percentage do you think of MSPs and then of customers are actually implementing what you articulated as this, what I would consider a fairly up-to-date, you know, 2.0 backup as a service methodology. Is it a lot? Is it a little? Do you have any thoughts about your own, you know, your own partner base of MSPs?
Yeah, no, our partner base is doing it. We have these capabilities into our, you know, in our platform. And you've asked me kind of a bigger question beyond a Seagra. I my general sense is, as we speak to new partners, you know, that we're working with, I think at the end customer, I'll start there, there's less than 20% of the end customers are even aware that they need to be doing this. Their thinking is, hey, I'm a customer of an MSP, and my MSP has figured this out for me. I don't need to worry about it. That's the problem. So it's very psychological in that sense. It's smart of them to rely on their MSP. And then if we move to the MSP world, I think it's definitely less than, like, you know, 35, 40% of MSPs. I think MSPs are relying on their vendors. Many, many MSPs are actually brokers. They're reselling somebody else's backup service, not even their own. And you know, that was a good business case and, you know, to do years ago when you're transitioning from being a reseller to being a service provider. But these days, I think you need to have better control of your customers, your revenue stream, your margins, and the technology that you're using to ensure the profitability, sustainability of your own business. So, yeah, I think it's less, you know, less than 35, 40% of the MSPs are doing it, you know, to their own dismay, you know, their own disdain. I think there's work to do, that MSPs have work to do. And backup is just a piece of it.
Sure. Right? It's a layer. It's one layer.
Yeah. It's just one piece of the stack, right? It's one. MSPs do way more than backup.
But it seems to me that this is an area where we should be at near 100%. Or as close to it as possible within the MSP community, backing up their own data in this methodology, and then we work on the greenfield opportunity or the blue ocean, whatever metaphor you want to use, of the end user community who have, you know, still a 10-year-old antiquated notion of backup, that, you know, one backup in the cloud is fine, I'm protected.
Correct. That's exactly right. I think the first step is that the MSPs do it for their own environment, you know, make sure that their processes are up to date to address the risks. And then they go out to market and they talk to their customers and they say, here are the modern risks. We want to update your backup processes or RMM processes or network processes, whatever. There's a lot of processes that customers do when you're accessing technology as a service. And because there's new risks, right? And unfortunately, MSPs don't have the power that a government does to force you to stay at home, you know, for 3 months or 2 months with your kids and everything.
Right.
But they are trusted business advisors, and I think customers will listen to the MSPs when they make a good business case that's, you know, for the well-being of the end customer and their sustainability.
But
and their business.
It really seems, though, Aaron, that this is, some people may disagree, We talked about this being one of several layers of protection for your practice and for your customers, but it seems like this is a fairly early on, like one of, if not the first, and certainly one of the first few things you want to harden, you want to really secure is your backup, because it gives you options, not if, but when you get attacked, right? I look at it as a when, not an if. That ransomware, that malware comes in, if your backup is not reliable, you don't have a lot of other options that are good, as I see it.
Well, one of the options is to pay that ransom. And you don't want to be doing that, but that's what some people do. And you are correct. You want to, you know, and backup is fairly straightforward and easy to solve. I mean, the technologies are there. The processes are there, known. You should go and talk to your incumbent vendor to get them to help you do this. And if not, start looking, you know, and to augment what you've got. Doesn't mean you have to ditch them. You should augment them. Do proofs of concepts and things like that. Once you've got that sorted out, then you go down to your customers. And you kind of say, hey, we need to update our processes. And we're going to start with backup.
Is this a, and I'm assuming, Sigra, you mentioned a couple times that you guys work with your partners, and I'm assuming you're doing some training or some counseling advice to encourage your partners to adopt this methodology.
We do. We build in the technology. And we have it in our training programs, and we regularly update, and we have cadence calls with all of them. And, you know, as we upgrade our software and do updates all the time, the stuff gets implemented by default. So, yeah, we're doing what we can to almost, I don't want to say the word force them to do it, but because we can't force our partners to do anything, but we kind of, you know, we do what we possibly can in upgrades to, you know, fortify our partners' environments. Absolutely. Well, that's, we see that as a responsibility to them, to us.
Yeah. Let's, you're right. You can't force anyone to do it, but you can. And I think this whole concept we've believed in for a long time, which is risk-based pricing, you know, the concept of being able to influence your customers through graded or varied pricing models based on the risk that the client presents. And there's a Wall Street Journal article just today or yesterday on the attack, the threat vector of MSPs, you know, and talking about the Cognizant breach that just happened. I mean, this stuff is out there, right? If the Wall Street Journal is writing about it, it's not like just in CRN or in any of the tech magazines. I think MSPs have a lot of ammunition to go out to their customers and advocate for what you have, what you've presented as a legitimate best practice for backup. True?
Yeah, I agree. And I think MSPs are, you know, becoming more and more sophisticated in understanding that they have to grade their customers, almost like, you know, like a financial services company where they look at their customers' credit risk. You know, you want to get a credit card? Yeah, I'd like to have a million dollar limit on it, but my bank says, no, you can't. Your credit risk is this. You know, we've checked your background, we've checked this, you know. So banks and financial services organizations look at their clients differently, and they grade them and they give them access to different types of credit levels and so on. Because of their processes, because of the way people govern themselves, you know, they've either got too much debt or they've got good debt levels or whatever. And I think MSPs should, you know, and the better MSPs are doing this now, they're kind of grading customers into, you know, sustainable, less sustainable and not sustainable, almost opportunistic. So you want to have a smaller percentage of your customers in the opportunistic, so you can take, you know, you can do business with them, but you shouldn't assume that they're going to be a long-term customer just because they're not very cyber hygiene or, you know, what other processes that you need to have good, you know, in the right verticals and so on. And then you have other types of customers up the food chain that are sustainable and profitable for you because they do have good cyber hygiene. They are flattening the curve, you know, just to today's theme. And they're going to be with you for a long time. As long as you do the right things to them, they'll treat you right and you'll treat them right. So they have to, you know, give them different credit scores.
Sure. No, I think that's a fantastic idea. We're almost out of time, and I want to get this one last perspective from you if I can. The data classification, you've spoken a number of times. I've heard you, you know, at the Asigra partner conferences. You talked about different types of data should be viewed differently, right? You should back it up differently. You should, you know, maybe encrypt it, you know, versus, you know, not encrypting other, you know, less important types of data. Has your philosophy changed at all in that regard of how MSPs should classify data belonging to them or to their customers?
No, they absolutely should continue to classify because different data is valued differently. You know, people, many folks in businesses think older backup copies are less valuable than younger backup copies or newer backup copies. And their processes have evolved Exactly, because they're classify it. People keep, you know, a month or 2 months of, you know, recent images or things like that that they can restore very quickly from. They don't replicate every single workload. They don't replicate every single application. You know, there are some that are more business critical than others. So classification and the way you protect that data is absolutely, and you should be charging, you know, differently for the different classes of data. And the age of the data, the type of the data, and you know, the nature of the applications themselves. So that's still commercially accurate.
Still relevant. Awesome. Good to know. Well,
still relevant.
We are out of time. Aaron, thank you again for participating in this series. And we've got a lot more. So for those of you who have not yet gone to Asigra.com, ASIGRA.com, talk to Aaron, talk to his team about the we're not going to call it a new backup methodology, but certainly a more up-to-date current backup best practice methodology, I think is a more apt term. And I think that these things and others, right, it's not the only thing, but there are others, but this is certainly a critical component to it, to flattening the cyber risk curve. And it's just an incredible amount of opportunity for the MSPs and their customers to do some real good in the world. And again, appreciate your thoughts and your contributions to this ongoing dialogue.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that is it for today's program of the MSP Zone. We will see you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.